Hey, y'all. My name is Ann Wyatt. I started my career in workforce development with the state of Kentucky in 2010. That experience ignited a deep passion for manufacturing within me. I started this show hoping to raise more awareness around the bright outlook manufacturing careers have. Join me as I sit down with some of the manufacturing industry's most successful change makers and learn how they're partnering people with technology. It's time to give people more meaningful work. This is Workforce 4.0. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Workforce 4.0. I'm super excited to have James Soto on with us today. James is a serial co-founder and founder. He has currently three brands in the manufacturing space: Industrial Strength Marketing, Industrial Studios, and then Industrial Workforce Solutions. Is that right, James?
Yeah, I'm a busy man, I think. Self-inflicted wounds here.
Yeah, you are. Well, I am so grateful to you for taking some time out of your busy schedule today to come on the show and talk manufacturing and workforce development. This is going to be such a treat for folks.
I'm thrilled to be here with you.
Awesome. Well, I will let you give yourself a more personalized introduction for those listening here today. Would you like to, in your own words, tell our listeners more about James Soto?
Oh, wow. So I think very simply, it's like something I aspire for my children to be. You know, every day work harder to be a gentleman, to be a scholar and learning, try to be athletic, you know, be artistic and have something you believe in, you know, and that's what I focus for and how I try to aspire to be. I'm an industrial. I was literally born in the Bronx, brought to a factory, literally like my father was working at a plant just outside of New York City. And I literally worked my way through college on the plant floor. My sister became an industrial engineer. I was in digital media and like all the convergence of Google and Yahoo forming in the 90s. And I got recruited by Thomas Publishing, which is ThomasNet, Thomas Register for American Manufacturers, to help them transition from print to digital. And saw amazing opportunity in the market. And I was like, wow, these folks really needed help transitioning from traditional to technology-based marketing. And about 2010, you know, fast forward in the business, the number one Inc. 5000 fastest growing company reached out to us saying, hey, we just moved and we need 160 engineers, and using recruiters at $20,000 a pop was just going to be really tough for us to get them to move. Yeah. They want to move from West Virginia to where they relocated. And we brought in new thinking and marketing and recruitment marketing strategies, you know, before you really saw that, you know, as much, you know, back in about 2010, and built a practice, work with some of the biggest transport companies, literally 1,000 jobs a year type recruitment marketing attribution we have to do. And then around the same time, you know, just about 2012, we got an opportunity and saw this formation of Manufacturing Day. And us being industrials, us being also steeped in workforce and overall marketing, we said, hey, let's get behind this. And we made the biggest donation in our history. And we helped, you know, brand, build, launch, and scale Manufacturing Day with NAM and FMA and all these acronyms, NIST, Manufacturing Institute, and just so many people. And just to see that grow to be literally 300,000 events, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of students, it trending on Twitter, and just creating a movement. Now it's really America's day. It's America's holiday. It's the first Friday of every October. It is Manufacturing Month. And, you know, that's where my story just began with, you know, with workforce.
That's amazing. Well, I mean, you obviously have done some amazing things throughout your career. ThomasNet has been huge for the industry. And if our audience still isn't familiar with ThomasNet, it is a very valuable resource for manufacturers and industrial solutions providers.
Great.
It's a go-to tool for me. I use that quite a bit. So it's really cool to see that you're a part of that. And then also Manufacturing Day has just become huge, right? I mean, we are all going to post the first Friday in October. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's like, it's like mandatory. Right. And then the involvement with the kids and getting the involvement for the school systems to do the tours has been huge, because I feel like we used to do that back in the 90s. So like, I went on a manufacturing plant tour, I think of like Coca-Cola in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, maybe when I was like in elementary school. But then we like kind of stopped that And then it was a long time before I was back in another plant. And by then the technology has changed so much. So then it's like night and day, right? Yeah,
it's really important because I do believe personally that although we're trying to change perceptions of manufacturing and manufacturing careers, I just think this generation, you know, came up at a different time. So I think we need to transition to creating perceptions and creating experiences. And it's great and it's wonderful. And to your point, seeing and even remembering something you did in manufacturing early on, I actually took my children up to Northwestern, Alabama for the best robotics competition. And these folks were cheerleading, they were having a blast. It was like a party. And we actually have an episode on it on our YouTube channel, but it was so much fun. My kids were so young and now they're graduating from college. And they just have this great manufacturing story, working in industrial a little bit here and there, you know, doing a manufacturing day event or two, which if you're listening, check out a manufacturing day event, mfgday.com.
That's right.
Definitely worth doing. And gosh, what a fun thing.
Yeah, I think that's so cool, but it's so important to get kids exposed to manufacturing and like let them see it. And I think that's, you know, a huge part of obviously why I started this show. Yeah. And what I'm so passionate about is, listen, we have to show everyone what we're doing. We can't just hide behind our facilities or in our trans parks or behind, you know, gates and not really get the word out there, right? Yeah.
We had to literally build playbooks for manufacturers on how to host a manufacturing day and do it right. Because if you don't do it right, you don't have your vestibule cleaned up, if you don't have access, if you don't have a theme and something you're focusing on to really present to these folks and make it fun, you know, it's really a challenge. So that's the good stuff. You know, manufacturing is great and it's amazing. And getting in the front door is interesting. One of the things that's really interesting for, I think, is that, you know, we're about 5 years into Manufacturing Day and it was just growing and scaling. This is all before COVID. And we want to say, hey, are we moving the needle? And NAM, National Association of Manufacturers, commissioned Deloitte to do a study. And we had apps throughout to get like an appropriate level of relevant statistical study of when these students started. They gave them the app and then they shared, you know, their experience after. And we saw 80% of them, I think this, that was 80% of them that really changed their perception of manufacturing.
And that's so amazing.
Place with the right initiative. And if we can get out there and create those perceptions, we can move the needle. So, you know, for me, that was the first time I believe at scale that industry was actually able to measure if we were tangibly, you know, if we did something, we would change perceptions of manufacturing and the career opportunities. Because the data doesn't lie. It's such a fantastic opportunity financially. It's such a great bridge to the middle class and well beyond that.
Yeah. When you're breaking down wage records of the different industries and you're kind of looking at all of that, you can go to like the Bureau of Labor, right, as statistics and get all of that information. It's there, or Onet Online.
Yeah.
There. So if you go and you look at that and you do a cross analysis comparison to other industries, I mean, this is a really huge opportunity for the middle class. Yeah. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about this industry and, you know, in particular myself, but yeah. I love this. I want to talk so much more about the leadership aspect of all this and get into that. But, you know, I can't miss my first question because it's always the same question, James, but I got to know, just to get it started in the right way, what's your favorite karaoke song or your favorite song?
I have a total go-to. Like I have
you?
My song. Oh, I know, but I need a partner, Anne.
I'll do it.
I need to say. So you ever see the movie Grease?
Oh, yeah.
Olivia Newton-John. John
Travolta. Oh, yeah.
You're the one.
And I've seen the Broadway show too.
I got chills. They're multiplying. And then I'm losing control. So yeah, that's my go-to.
I like that one.
Did anyone sing yet for you on their
No. Now I have sang like maybe one time.
Come on. So next time I see you at, we're at, like, you know, to wherever we're at, And we're going to hit a karaoke place. So let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's low key on the agenda, actually.
Yeah, that's easy. That's an easy win. So
we'll have to do that. I'm holding you to that.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to share the stage with you, but it has been an honor to share some of these leadership conversations with you as well. But you're really in focus on like trends and analysis with manufacturing and industry. And I don't think for those of us that kind of all run in that circle, or maybe like our audiences on LinkedIn, they're not really as well aware of that aspect of what I think that you're super skilled in, which is trends and analysis. And kind of giving your background expertise in this, like what are some of the emerging trends that you see shaping the future of the manufacturing workforce? Oh. And then with that, like how do companies adopt and pivot to meet those, do you think?
Yeah. So I'll kind of go in reverse, I guess, that question, starting from what you just mentioned. Like, how do you like pivot? You've got to, you know, understand how the person you're targeting consumes the world, the channels by which they get their information. And so I think as you're looking at, you know, attracting that next generation, that person that's looking to upskill, or someone that's really looking, you know, to really just do something better for themselves and get training, you know, those are the things I think are really key. And we all like get our information, we learn differently. So what I've learned over the years is you got to meet people where they're at and really meet their expectations where they're at. So here's the marketer in me. And so what that means is like, if you're on TikTok, there's a totally different employer value proposition and tone that you probably want to set there versus Instagram or on LinkedIn. So I think the first thing I've learned is you've got to really meet people where they're at. You know, we have a very unique perspective. Like, we're really weird at industrial workforce team. We're really weird in the sense we're working with a collection of multiple woodworking industry manufacturing associations that are trying to create a movement themselves. And so we're often engaged with trying to help them reach these folks. And if you start, look at my journey starting there in like, you know, let's say 2010 to now, how much has changed? I mean, I think we just got our first iPhone in 2008. And so I think we really had to learn how to evolve how we communicate to meet them there. And from a statistician standpoint, we do have, you know, 16,000 jobs that are, you know, open and available in the woodworking industry, woodworking manufacturing. And it's actually an advanced manufacturing play. There's artisanal, there's, you know, craft woodsmanship, fine woodwork, you know, woodworking folks, and, you know, about, you know, 11 associations, you know, there. You know, that's just one case in many. Lots of opportunity. And, you know, the other fun, you know, part is we worked with Dream It, Do It, which is a grassroots initiative to create awareness by state. We worked with the Manufacturing Institute. They're part of NAM. And that was really about mobilizing them about awareness about careers. And it was completely built. We did it with Tennessee. And we built that for them. And, you know, I think back then it was like $68,000 a year was like the job opportunity there as you looked at some of the tracks. And, you know, same
thing. I mean, that's amazing.
Skills. Yeah. So if people really look at the alternate of choices that they have, and I'm particularly interested in going from the poverty line to bridging to the middle class. I think for me, you know, my parents came up in the projects, the Bronx, and multiple families live together and trying to make ends meet and having that ability to bridge and do something better. And back then, projects were great. My parents, they were new and not a place you wanted to leave and be part of. And so great memories of my family. But I think that's what I look at manufacturing for, because I'm that manufacturing story. I'm the promise of manufacturing. 42 years my father worked in manufacturing for the same company.
And the same company. Yeah. See, I love that.
Yeah.
There's just so much power in that kind of testimony and like that legacy manufacturing company. Do you think we'll ever get back to that? And I mean, there's still some plants that that do that. I mean, there's still plants that I know of that, I mean, they've got like a waiting list, or they've got like families. I mean, multiple generations of their family work at that plant.
Man, I hope so. You know, to be real honest, there's so much change going on in terms of how we work. I think the whole contract between a society and work, I think in the next decade, is going to transform incredibly. We're seeing that now, just watching some content on what's happening in China with their rideshare. I mean, they have such an oversaturation of rideshare because of the poor economy that there's so much oversupply that they can't even make money. You know, 200 yuan a year, that doesn't even cover their cost of the driving the vehicle and cost. And so meeting these disruptive business models like ride sharing and the gig economy to automation, you know, I think what I hope for in getting all of us back together is that, you know, we are truly freed from dangerous and repetitive work that was not natural to humans 200 years ago. And we have to work and we have to labor. But my hope is we can bring people together and they can work together and find a common cause and mission and purpose driven endeavor to make ends meet. But I do think a lot is going to change. And I do remember working through college on that same plant floor with my dad. He was a manager there. And I remember sitting in the break room with the guys and they're playing spades and they're all just talking and cracking up and joking. And I've always honored and celebrated people in manufacturing, especially the folks on working line 17 on the shampoo line at Clairol. Like that for me is something special, to be able to look at every single one of those people that they put kids through college on that plant for. And maybe it wasn't always the best pay, but they were still able to do that. And my father used to go out and help people buy their first car and stuff that worked for him there. And, you know,
yeah. Well, it had that community feel to it. I guarantee you, because we both have kids and yours are older than mine is still young. He's like 7, but a real sense of community is when you bring your kiddos around and you know that the other adults in the room are going to get on to your kids the way that you do. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Like, was that a thing?
Oh, I said a few things that I earned a response to. I paid my dues. Like, what? These guys are like 20 years.
Yeah. Right? You can trust. Like, that's your tribe, right? Like, that is indicative of your tribe. Yeah. You know, I can imagine bringing Phoenix around some of our friends and him acting up and them being like, Phoenix, you know, your mama would have a fit. But I mean, it was that kind of mentality, and like, exactly like the whole story with playing spades. And if you needed something, you know, we'd help you out. I think we've really got to get back to that in society at large, but specifically manufacturing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It'd be awesome.
I agree. It's such a great place to be. And, you know, it harkens to a different time and it's just crazy. Pensions, remember those?
Oh my, I try to have this conversation with people because, like, I don't think, you know, there was such a time when we had pensions. For those listening, we used to have pensions, and see, it was this thing where you paid in and it was like 401k, only better, right?
Yeah. You earn your pension and they're essentially taken care of for the rest of your retired life through. And we've got our 401ks now and our Roths, but those are optional and not always taken advantage of. But yeah, it's a whole different thing. And now we're talking about, with all this automation and AI, you know, potentially having to go to universal income, because you're in an age of abundance. And you probably know this, the number one employer of men in the United States is driving jobs. And if we really truly are in a path to transition to autonomous transport, which there's exciting progress with AI right now, I drive a Tesla and I'm seeing zero intervention drive. So imagine when many years from now, the most expensive thing for freight companies are the driver. What if I'm half wrong? It's so disruptive and that's just one industry. And so for me, I think it comes back to like the belief in, when it comes to the manufacturing workforce, I believe in the power potential of women and men and people from all makes, you know, the potential of them in manufacturing. I think it's a beautiful thing, but I do think we're going to have to adapt in the next decade. And there's two things when you're dealing with change management. There's like adaptive change, where you have to ultimately adapt. And then there's functional change. You have to change functionally, like how you work. Are you willing to adapt? And some people aren't. And some people are. And then like you have to really learn. And those things are really key.
Yeah, they are key. Do you remember a couple of years ago, there was this like keynote presentation or something, a panel discussion. Elon Musk was on it. I think another founder billionaire was on it. I can't quite remember because, I mean, it's been several years ago, this conversation, but they were talking about AI and the potential impacts of AI and how people will be artists in the future.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. I think who's going to win in the future, I think, are the folks that actually have creativity, have a talent, have something. Maybe you're God-given, like a voice. My daughter is a, you know, fantastic, you know, performer. And I can't say, but she's got a pretty major gig coming out of college. It's about to get announced in about less than a week. But I just think about a world where so many things can ultimately be, you know, handled. Where's the value in people? And I think it's our creativity, it's our skills, it's our craftsmanship. And that for me sounds closer to like what it was like 2 years ago, 200 years ago, rather.
Right.
And I think it's going to be a fun future, but definitely lots of differences.
But you definitely, so you have some more perspective though on this, right? Because you founded Nashville Makes. And really, I think when you get into like for me in Bowling Green, I don't think we had like a big makers community per se, but now in Huntsville, I have slowly but surely been exposed to these makers groups where they're smaller entities, they're 3D printing, they're doing all kinds of really cool stuff. And it's just, it's got more of that artisanal flair to it, mm-hmm. like artist flair to it.
Yeah.
So can you tell us like, what is that like? And where do you think industrial makers will have a role in that future work?
Well, there's the Urban Manufacturing Alliance, which is these maker, like Nashville Made is like one of them. And, you know, the mission of Nashville Made is to make way for, you know, makers and manufacturers in Nashville. And the big issues that cities have is that, you know, the cost of real estate and facilities, having designated multi-use, mixed-use industrial zones or just pure industrial. So there's the land side of it from that standpoint. And then all the way down to like, how do you get that craft maker that wants to like be a cut and sew person that makes, you know, clothing products, all the way through, like I make cakes and now I want to learn how to take them to market, how to get them in Whole Foods market and the business side of that. And so, you know, people have different aspirations. Some people just want to be known to do one-off craft things. Like, let's say I'm an iron worker, or I make custom, you know, re-engineer products like musical equipment. You know, that's the kind of stuff where I love unleashing that creativity. And I hope not everything is just mass produced in a factory, because I think what some of the most beautiful things we make are handmade, and I don't see that going anywhere because it's just so therapeutic and enjoyable to do.
Right. Really.
Yeah. Nashville Made is really, you know, for me, a labor of love, but all these people have different wants out of what they do as makers. And some people want a business. Some people want a business that scales. Some people just want a hobby.
But I think that's such a cool avenue for manufacturing. Yeah. Like the industry, you know, because you do think about, when you think about manufacturing, I mean, of course, your first thought is, okay, Transpark, industrial site facility. Yeah, I haven't had anyone on the show before that can really talk about greenfield sites and what that looks like in like area industrial authorities and development and what that kind of project looks like, and then the access to the utilities, and then the access to rail, and then what all goes, you know, what all kind of goes into that.
Yeah, well, that's part of like urban planning. So, you know, our building, we're in the historic packaging plant here, and we're part of one of those, you know, greenfield properties. And for us, it's interesting because when we created Nashville Made, you know, it started with a public-private partnership and a B Corporation we created. And what it was really cool about is we were bringing the craft brewery companies in. We're bringing the mayor's office from urban planning and different incentive programs they had about around affordable housing. We were bringing up the question like, hey, are we just going to let all of these great places in historic, the industrial Germantown community be converted to apartment buildings? How do we find new classes for zoning? How do we provide pathways for people to learn and take sewing courses and classes? You know, how do we bring all these constituent stakeholders together? And what was really amazing is when we had the meetups, because we even had them here and had about 100 people, and everyone's getting, we like, I wonder how like artisanal craft batch maker types are going to get along with the industrial manufacturing types.
Yeah.
We were curious. So tickled and how they hit it off. They were swapping cards. Like, oh, wow, I need a fabricator. Can I tour Animax, which creates the huge like robot, you know, robots for like amusement parks, and the one that was on Jurassic Park, like one of the most famous ones out there. We're bringing young fabricators in because they were looking for talent, for costume making, for animatronics. And these folks were just hitting it off because they had a core passion, knowledge, and skill for their hands, for engineering, for essentially the elements of making things. And that's what I think was the biggest takeaway from Nashville Made, and I think some of these other urban manufacturing initiatives, is that when you get the band together, they have a lot of common interest. And we brought on a sponsor company called JPW Industries. And if you're in woodworking, you'll know their brands like Powermatic and Jet and things like that. And it turns into business too. And as a matter of fact, that's a client of industrial. And it just like, we actually got business because of it. And we have that hopefully in mind, but we're purpose-driven. Again, this is all volunteer and purpose-driven stuff. And I think you've got to be willing to make that investment with the understanding that goodwill will make good things happen.
I just love that. I mean, everybody kind of gets together. You're kind of like nervous about it at first. Everybody gets together and just starts nerding out and like finds that common ground. That's really what it's all about, right?
It's a little pain for me because what happens is, it's like, you know, it'd be cool. Let's host and launch Nashville Made. It's like, James, like, none of this is billable time. That's how we make money.
And right.
Like, so right. We made a
massive but this is cool.
Investment in Manufacturing Day. It was massive. I mean, like way bigger than our britches as an organization for the time. And it turned out we now work with some of the people at the top of the government sector and the advanced manufacturing institutes because of it. And so I think my big take on workforce, because these are all related to workforce.
It is.
And what's really great is if you invest in the community, you engage with good intent and good spirits. And if you're willing to show like show your mettle and put, you know, roll up your sleeves and do some work, and got to the point where I think good things will happen. And it's funny, I remember Jennifer McNally pulled me aside when I was in Washington, D.C. at the National Association of Manufacturers. She goes, I got to talk to you, James. Like, you're doing this. You know, you put so much into this. She's like, what's your ask? So this is D.C. Everybody wants to know in Washington, D.C., politically, like,
what do you want? Yeah.
Like, I don't want to ask. It's just being part of this and being connected at this high level. But no, that can't be enough. You've got to make money. Like, what's your ask? And we ended up working with them a bit, you know, for a couple of years. And then it led to this and led to that. And I just found that when you think about your career, when you think about whether you're a business person, everyone's concerned with networking and being there and exposed. I think you have to be really willing to put yourself out there authentically. But when you see a good thing and you see a good moment and you see some potential, if it's in your bones, if you have that desire to have vision and put yourself out there and willing to do the work, like you can make amazing things happen, and you can get yourself embroiled into some great opportunities, whether it's partnerships or careers or job searches.
You can.
But more than the passion and the purpose behind the business, and I love the mission statement, they really live up to it. But if you're really into it, like get into it and be willing not to just get a job, but try to get on mission, you know, and get on vision.
I think that that's so cool that you said that, because I cannot tell you how many times where I've just like walked into something like that. Hey, y'all, what are we doing today? Yeah. And then these major ideas are hatched, right? And you're like, yeah. Okay. And then it just kind of leads. It just takes on its own life force, right?
Yeah.
And it's so fun.
You know, it's so interesting. Fun. It's so interesting. Yeah. And it's like, it's funny. I haven't talked about this all at once in a while. And I'm like thinking about, like, wow, like that's some stuff. There's a theme here. And it's like, we think about our careers in our body of work. I like to put it as our body of work at the end of the day, you know, and we're sitting here, there's probably 3D podcasting. We're probably in three dimensions in another world or something.
That's cool.
And if we're sitting here at the end of our careers, like what are the things we're going to be when it comes to our careers? What, when we look at it at, you know, the retirement phase, you know, what are we going to look at with fondness? It's, I don't know if it's going to be the money we made. I think it's going to be those key moments that like you worked really hard and you're proud of the work you did. It's like, I consider like certain moments when we did manufacturing day, that moment when, you know, one of my team members, I sent him, I was like, you got to go see Obama name it for the first time, declare the first manufacturing day, the first Friday of the month, like that for all the freaking hard work was a great moment. That's what we're going to take with us. That those real things we're really proud of for our body of work and the lives we've impacted along the way. That's what we're going to be talking about when we're, you know, when we're talking about our lack of pensions for real.
Yeah. And like we're living that out. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, it's really important to keep mental tabs of your body of work, not just from I'm looking from a job standpoint, but the things that you are going to say that you're so proud and so thankful and fortunate to be, have been part of. And I think that's the spirit, you know, that, and that's the wish I have for everyone in their career. It's just to have those moments. And for me, it's people saying, hey, James, I'm getting my first house. I'm getting my house. And I'm thinking like, man, I can barely afford payroll starting a business. And then you're starting to see people and compounding, and you see millions and millions of dollars that you've earned and all that great stuff as a business, but it, well, guarantee you most of it goes into the people. And if you can't get really excited about people who've impacted you and you may have impacted, I wish that for you, if you know, for your career.
I love that. I feel like we're so aligned in that. I just think you've got to like go, what are you leaving behind? And it's not, for some people, it's like a physical or tangible legacy aspect. For me, I think it's personal for everyone that is like super ambitious and is super career driven and everything. But like, for me, it's like, what have I accomplished that I can rest and know that my child and his children are gonna be okay. You know what I mean? Like that's, I guess, my driving motivator behind it.
Yeah, it's so visceral. It's like to our DNA, we're here to provide, we're here to nurture. You know, the thing that really gets me, and I'm getting older, maybe that's why, what really gets me is I really think like about our second act in life, you know, at my age. I think of like, you know, you know, I'm gonna live to 100. You gotta set a goal, right? And so when you hit 50, you're like, okay, I'm a Gen Xer, coolest generation ever. Sorry, I'll just put it out there.
Now y'all are fun.
Yeah. And I really think like, what's this second act gonna be like? You know, you wanna have like really good mental health, emotional, physical health. You want to increase your health span, not just lifespan, but health span. And I think about that a lot. And I think about what, like, when it comes to our career, everything we've worked towards the second act, you know, what are you going to do to find joy and, you know, peace and purpose? And I really think about not wanting to see anyone be alone in their life. And I think we have so much responsibility of what are we really working towards? Do you have a fortune of friends and family? You know, do you have that, you know, that thing, even if you're a hermit, that just brings you so much joy in your solitude? But I do think a lot about that. And I hope that for everyone, for all of our work, right? What is this all about? For all of our work, you know, you retire at 65, 62, there's a long way to go.
Right.
And I don't know that we do enough time thinking about our careers and how it ladders up to that. And that, you know, we all want to provide and nurture. And to your point of being motivated, I'm significantly more concerned about the second act and my family and my children, because I want them to be okay. I want them to never be alone. And I think that a lot of times when we think about work, we're talking so much about the money and all this stuff. But man, like, we are defenseless when we enter this world and someone cares for us, and we are just as defenseless towards the end. Often, and you know, and it'd be nice to have someone there to care for us if we can't care for ourselves. And I think that's the beauty of life. And you know, I hope you begin and end well. And same thing with your work. Be better for having known and or work with each other.
I love it so much. And there's some manufacturing companies that I really think are being super innovative and progressive and doing. Living that same kind of mantra mentality, you know? You're a great storyteller and a great podcaster. Yeah. And I think that has something to do with it. But, you know, when you're thinking about like helping other companies share their story, how do they get that across? And how do they get it across? And more so like beyond the whole selling or business to business aspect of it, how do they get it across to like communities? How do they get it across to job seekers? And what are some things they can do?
Yeah. So authenticity is key, and it's very hard. And often, even though you may have a real purpose, a real mission, let's say core values, and core values are really key, because I think those are the things that help guide us, that shows who, like, what embodies us. Often when, you know, we do brand workshops or employee value proposition work or employer branding. But when we're getting down to the core values, it has to be embodied by the leader. And by the way, as leaders, we're in bounds and out of bounds of our core values. It's really a tool we use. And so I think if you're going to go out, to your point, to the community and you're going to reach out, I think it's key to know who you are, where you're going, and how you're going to get there, and what are your mission, vision, and values. And so for me, I think if there is a clear vision for an organization, if there is a purpose statement or cause that you have, I think the work you have to do as an organization is to really understand, you know, those things, but also your core values. So our core values is that it's a manifesto, but essentially we work for life. We don't work, no one works for me. They work for their family, the people they love, the causes that are close to their heart. Our company, we actually believe that, you know, we are ultimately responsible for our growth and development, but we have to help people be better for having known and worked with us, and that you have to do the things you're passionate about. That's actually our work for life core value. We question the status quo as a core value. We roll up our sleeves, like nothing's above us, beneath us, not possible. You got to roll up your sleeves. And then, you know, we tough love, you know, we're in the business going, hey, I love you to death, but we're here to help you win. And tough love's hard to do. And then we deliver and delight. We're here not just to mail it in, but between perfection and production, did we hit the objective, you know, as a marketing organization? Those are the things that we have to do. And why I mention all of that, and I think it's really key to getting your outreach, is if you can get everyone understanding your mission, your vision, and your core values, and actually what they mean, but you manage people to say, how do we ultimately, like, live by these. So we hire and fire by our core values. You can't join us if you're not a plus on all those core values. And when we do reviews, if you're a plus minus, it's a heads up. And if you're minus, you can't work here anymore. That's how serious we are. But what I think the better way to explain it, less punitively, and definitely rewards are with those living up to those aspirations. And we are off track in our journeys from time to time, is then you can then go into the community because you can articulate your values. And I think the best tip I would give to folks, once you have core values, especially as a leader, basically for everyone, when it comes to something that happens, like I had a team member that came in, we had this deadline, and we do not celebrate people working past 6 p.m. We don't celebrate, thanks for coming in and working
Yeah.
We have seasons. We have seasons for sure in our business, but we don't celebrate that. If you miss a child's recital, you're coming to my office. We're having a talk. I didn't bust my chops creating this business to try to create an environment so you have that grace and that ability to do what's most important. Go see your family. That's the regrets at the end of your career, missing out, that we want to avoid. But, but basically, what we try to do, what I try to do, and every leader should do this, is every time you see that core value in action, you call it out. So when someone comes in and stays extra hours, like, hey, thanks. Thanks, Christine. Thanks. I saw that you came in. Thanks for rolling up your sleeves. You know, and so when they're embodying it, we're connecting it to the core value when we see it in action. And when we don't, we also bring it up to more in a private environment. And so, you know, it's like, hey guys, like we work for life. We don't live to work, you know? So, you know, be there at those life special moments. So even though we have this PTO policy and all this stuff, if there's something special and it's once in a lifetime and you're going to see a long lost family member.
Right.
This is
right.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the ticket. Go.
Yeah. Bye. And then we're trying to get better at like letting people, we were great at this for years, but then we got really big. Like we have a go dark policy. We have a team that's so passionate about serving the clients and we have to deliver, but I'm actually working on the go dark stuff again. So don't vacation while you work and don't work while you vacation. There you go.
Right. Well, you do need that time. I think it took me years to realize that too. So, I mean, like this is a new revelation for me. Yeah. Like I used to be the epitome of, oh, I'm on vacation. I'm in the middle of Disney World at a park. I got to go so that I can take care of some work. Like, I mean, that was me for years. So now that I'm older and I'm just more limited, you know what I'm saying? Like you just get a little bit more limited when you're older with kind of your capacity, I think. Well, and
because then you're maybe in full-time chauffeur mode.
Yeah. it's really just your kids. Just, you know, they're like,
I need you to have a car now.
So you got to run and do all that. So you're limited and you understand the value of your working hours and your after hours. I think Phoenix has been very good at creating that awareness within me. So,
yes. Yeah, well, we've had family conversations before and that's such a special thing to have a family and be brave and provide and, you know, do it all, you know, girl boss, influencer, you know, news and brews out there, manufacturing champions, you know, influencers in the house. Let's go. Let's go.
Okay. Yes. But I'm prudent, I think. In our group. I mean, I'm kind of like Buzz Killington.
Have you given like the scoop on the crew yet to your audience? I think a number of them have been guests. So you have like the best group of manufacturing allies and friends and women and men and students and a lot of creators and influencers. And so maybe a little tip for everybody. Create your tribe and your career tribe, because I think we're all sharing in a journey, you know, to this new medium that's still somewhat fresh to manufacturing, and people are truly making way for themselves by telling their stories and documenting and honoring and celebrating and being curious and sharing their growing insights with people. So kudos to you, you know, Anne, for really taking the mantle of workforce 4.0 and really bringing focus and concentration and your personality and influence to industry.
Yeah. General. But I do think it's like, I do think it's a responsibility, you know, to like lead, use your platform to lead people. And I think you do that so well as well.
Yeah, really. I try. I am not perfect by any ways, any measure, but I think the key thing is, I think it just comes back to like what we're talking about comes down. What do we really value? And I think what I appreciate about you and a lot of the people out there that are trying to recruit and bring folks into this industry, I just appreciate the folks that have given manufacturing a chance, who have made that investment and they've come to us wherever they are in the supply chain And I think that that's just very honorable, because there's a difference between, we've all had jobs, right?
But oh, yeah.
Like, somehow yeah. we've made this path to care about an industry. And I think that's maybe a question. Why should we care? Like, why should we care about this, though? And I think that's all those things you mentioned. Like, it's the people. It's the fact that 2022, we got together for a long time since COVID. And it was like, I called it like a friend around every bend. And we were at McCormick Place. And I felt like that was the homecoming for manufacturing, you know, the IMTS Plus Creators Lounge. And I think that's where we met for the first time. And I think, were you there? Were you there in Chicago, McCormick Place?
I think, you know, honestly, I think I missed that event. But I
well,
we
was. Caught you at, after that. We caught you after the new year.
We went to Manufacturing Champions and we did that. And then, yeah, News and Brews was awesome. I love Jim too. You know, I just love Jim.
Yeah, that was we hosted with Informa Markets Engineering. You know, they're the biggest trade show conference holder in the world.
Yes.
That's crazy.
They do shows internationally. Yeah. It is.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you some things about what we're up to, but I can't yet.
We'll catch up at IMTS this year.
Yeah. It's going to be good. So, Jim Olin, shout out to Industrial Studios, telling the stories of the next wave of the Industrial Revolution. They're great. And you've been so helpful in the News and Brews work we did at IME West out there in Anaheim, and bringing the workforce experience. And I think at the end of the day, for our careers, it's these relationships we, you know, make along the way. And I'll say this to you because it was said to me, we may not always work together, but we'll always be friends. And I think that's what I'm looking for. And the gentleman who said that to me is Randy Bro, and he's the president of Genuine Parts Company. And he was with Baldor, ABB Baldor. And then he was the president of Motion Industries. And he's just a friend for life. And I think that's what I really cherish. And I know we're going to keep in touch.
For sure. James, I really appreciate the conversation today. But for those listening, do you want to tell us where the best point of contact is for you? How can we get a hold of James Soto?
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm very fortunate enough to have a great team at Industrial Strength Marketing. We're in the industrial family of brands. You can find us at industrialstrengthmarketing.com. You can find the great, wondrous, and just excitingly entertaining folks from Industrial Studios at industrialstudios.com. And we are launching in industrialworkforce.com, and we treat them all as very separate, specialized disciplines, as separate business units. And so whether it's addressing the next wave of the Industrial Revolution's workforce to just making marketing the strength of your business, like, we just are fortunate enough to have great friends like you and people from time to time we can help. So thanks for the acknowledgement. That's how you find me.
Awesome. Absolutely. Well, thank you, James, so much. I appreciate the conversation. It means a lot to me that you came on the show today. And for those listening to Workforce 4.0, get in touch with James Soto and learn more about all their awesome solutions. And we will see you all next week on Workforce 4.0.
Thanks, Anne.